Hi, everyone. Jim Gossard and John Richardson here. Once again, we're going to talk about it. We're from Republicans Overseas, and we're going to talk again about the whole situation and the impacting overseas Americans in regard to taxation. And John, we've been addressing this now for a few weeks. General topic is, and a general theme, Americans are far more punitively taxed. Americans living abroad are far more punitively taxed than Americans living domestically. And for that matter, small businesses owned by Americans abroad are particularly egregiously taxed, either compared to small businesses domestically, or for that matter, if you're a small business owner and you're an American citizen, and you live abroad, you're subject to a taxation that is unlike anything that your competitors will face. I went through that as a small business owner in Hong Kong. But John, let me turn it over to you. How did we get here? Where are we specifically, and how did we ever get here?
Well, we got here because U.S. tax policy is like a really, really bad website that's never been redesigned. You know, you get lobbyists that come in and, you know, we get this small change and that small change, and we get this new law with this exception, which applies only if it took place on a Thursday afternoon in a year that's not a leap year. And, you know, it's just... you know, because there's no comprehensive tax policy in the United States whatsoever. It's just been, you know, an evolution of one reaction to something rather than decision, and a bunch of lobbyists just year after year.
Well, we haven't talked about small businesses yet in this little series. Why don't we talk a little bit specifically about small businesses? The transition tax, which is a one-time thing that was part of the 2017 tax law, and it's continuing. It continues on to live as the GILTI tax. Mm-hmm. That is a tax that, if you're a small business owner and you're American, let's take an example. We were talking about this before. Let's say you have an American that owns a bar in Hong Kong. That bar owner is subject, in order to comply with U.S. taxes, that bar owner is going to be subject to a level of taxation that his neighbor next door, who may not be a U.S. citizen, is not going to face. It is tough enough. If you're going to own a small business anywhere, it's tough enough to comply. It's tough enough to succeed and make that business operable. I don't know how anybody in that situation, an American living abroad, can comply with U.S. taxes and have a successful small business, because your competitors, who are probably on the same street with you in a case like this, they don't have to pay the same taxes you're paying. They're paying only domestic tax, and you're paying both domestic tax as well as you're subject to what in a one-time basis was a transition tax, and you're subject to the GILTI tax. How does that work?
Oh my God, how does that work? Well. Let me just make one comment before we get into the how it works. It works when this transition tax and GILTI stuff, when an American is carrying on small business in a what's called a controlled foreign corporation. Okay, so it's not all business forms. It's something that would qualify as a corporation under U.S. tax law. But I would add that the fact that it's called a corporation in another country doesn't necessarily make it a corporation for U.S. tax laws either. So, I mean, you know, there's a huge, huge, you know, compliance burden of just trying to, you know, figure out what it is you're dealing with. But basically, the situation is that, you know, if we can begin with your talking about Americans abroad being taxed more punitively, that the U.S. tax code is incredibly hostile to anything that's foreign, meaning non-U.S. In fact, if you look at the Internal Revenue Code, when you see the word foreign, you are almost certain to see the word penalty in the same sentence, okay? Generally starting at about $10,000. And tragically, the only thing that any normal human being can understand if they look at the legislation is that they're about to get a $10,000 penalty. They will have no idea how to comply at all. But if we look at the transition tax and GILTI thing, which is a particularly egregious example of, you know, what I would call the side effects, the collateral damage, probably the unanticipated consequences of citizenship-based taxation. What you see is small people like you, like me, like millions of others, you know, being broadsided by a bunch of rules where they're looking only at, you know, the apples of the world, you know, these large multinationals. So, you know, the idea was that, a company like Apple, I mean, you know, they did something that was really un-American. And that is that they carried on business outside the United States. Okay. You know, I mean, there are special provisions for that kind of nasty.
How dare they, John?
What's that?
How dare they? Carrying on business outside the U.S.
Well, you know, you were an executive in China for years and years. I mean,
for sure.
You know, I'm surprised you haven't been executed or something. I mean, maybe you count your lucky stars. But so what was happening was basically this. So, I mean, I think a five-year-old in a sandbox would understand that the U.S. can't directly tax foreign corporations. So you take a company like, let's call it Apple, but it could be anybody. You know, uses a company in Ireland, which has a lower tax rate to carry on business. So the company in Ireland makes all this money. Yeah, to be sure, it pays taxes in Ireland. But the point was that because Apple Inc., meaning the main shareholder, right, of the smaller foreign subsidiary, the controlled foreign corporation, wasn't actually receiving any dividends out of that corporation, so they wouldn't be paying any tax. So what happened in 2011 was, the U.S. government said, enough is enough. We can't have an American having a foreign corporation and being allowed, you know, to somehow use that to, you know, escape U.S. taxation. So they can't even imagine that in most cases, the purpose of the corporation is to actually carry on a business outside the United States. So what we're going to do is, you know, we're going to say, by God, you know, you've got this pool of earnings and you've been engaged in this thievery, this dishonesty, this un-Americanness since 1986. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to say, by God, all those retained earnings back to 1986, we're going to put a one-time tax on them. We're going to pretend you received that money, even though you never received it. So that was what the transition tax was all about. Now, interestingly, because the tax rate that was going to be paid on that was considerably lower than the tax rate at the time in the U.S., 35%, I wouldn't be surprised if many corporations didn't see that as a pretty good deal because they were able to essentially cleanse, you know, those profits from the specter of U.S. taxation down the road by paying this one-time tax at a lower rate. But the entity responsible for the tax would be Apple Inc., right? Not the individual shareholders of Apple.
Yep.
Now, let's compare that to your example of some American, you know, trying to carry on a business, opening a bar in Hong Kong, where that individual American is the sole shareholder. Well, in this case, of course, the same rules apply because equality means that the same rules should apply to Apple as apply to Jim. That's what equality means, right? Okay, obviously not. All right. But in any case, the fundamental difference was that the individual owner of the bar would be hit with his tax and income inclusion on money they never received. Yeah. So this is just nothing more. It's just, you know, just confiscation. I mean, it's basically clearly an expense. So what happens is the American walks out of the bar and says, oh, my God, I've got this extra cost. And the Hong Kong local owner looks at him and smirks and says, yep, I'm glad I'm not American and subject to this burdensome kind of tax. So in other words, there was this huge hit, you know, to individual shareholders. And, you know, we look at what happened in Canada, which is extraordinary, where it's normal for people to create these small business corporations, which double in part as private pension plans, because, you know, there aren't really good public pensions in Canada. But of course, the same rule applied. I mean, you know, these were people carrying on legitimate businesses in Canada, trying to feed themselves and their families. But, you know, from a U.S. point of view, I mean, these small business corporations were nothing but instruments of tax deferral.
Well, and lawfully planning for their retirement future, as was intended by the Canadian government, too.
I mean, absolutely.
I'm thinking in that case, you're probably talking, I would imagine, most professionals, such as physicians, dentists, lawyers, this type.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Or even small business owners, say a small plumbing company, just pick an example. I would imagine very commonly used and encouraged by the Canadian government, tax laws and a structure set up for the benefit of people in that situation to save for their retirement.
Absolutely. That's the whole purpose. And in fact, you know, as you may know, Canada has a single payer healthcare system. And my understanding is a few years ago, you know, part of the rationale was for letting professionals incorporate, okay, which traditionally they hadn't been able to do, was to give them the benefits of the tax breaks that were available to Canadian controlled private corporations. So by doing this, the U.S. is sort of, you know, now make no mistake, Article 10 of the tax treaty specifically prohibits the U.S. from taxing these foreign corporations. So what they do is they tax the individual shareholders. It's sort of an in run around that. But, you know, they come in and say, well, you know, we see that you have a private pension plan. Bad luck. We're taking it. Okay. So what the transition tax really was the confiscation of private pension plans of individuals all around the world. There's no other way to put it. And anything else, I think, is an extreme, a severe distortion of reality. So that's what happened there. But I mean, once they'd come in and done that damage, they said, never again, never again will we allow a controlled foreign corporation to be used for tax deferral. So basically, and I agree it's more complex than this, but the basic message is that, you know, on a going forward basis from 2018, any money earned inside a controlled foreign corporation is presumptively attributed to the U.S. shareholder. Completely.
Yeah. I can't imagine what a small business owner would go through, especially because obviously in any, you know, small company balance sheet, retained earnings does not equal cash on hand. And if you have a small business and you got to, let's say you got to invest in building a building, a warehouse or something like that. Well, you don't have cash on hand sitting around to pay a guilty tax or a transition tax. You presumably are conducting your business as the way you would think the United States government would like overseas Americans to be conducting themselves, would be investing in their businesses, investing in the local economy, paying lawful taxes, being an ambassador of the United States, but it doesn't work out that way. You don't have the latitude to manage the cash on hand of the business because on a retained earnings basis, that's certain amount of that has got to be available to pay whatever tax they might decide to hit you with. I mean, I'm not exaggerating.
That is exactly right. I mean, so what they have done through this, you know, citizenship taxation thing, right, is they have actually made U.S. citizenship a very clear liability. And by the way, just to add to this, okay, I have helped people renounce U.S. citizenship for the sole reason that other investors wouldn't let them buy into businesses because they were a U.S. citizen.
I mean,
Americans are completely toxic, you know, throughout the world. And the value of U.S. citizenship has been and continues to be destroyed by the U.S. government. Now, you know, what's interesting is that I bet you there are people who were listening to this and saying, oh, no, that this guy, he's wrong. I mean, this can't be true. I mean, you know, no, no, and no. Okay, it's 100% true. And this is what's going on every day of the week. And what's interesting about it is that I have never seen any evidence in the discussions leading up to these, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or whatever the thing was called in 2017, but suggests that they consider the impact on individuals outside the United States even for a second. I mean, this is pure collateral damage. And this, Jim, is why, okay, you know, to theme this with, you know, our previous discussions, there is no solution to this that leaves any form of citizenship-based taxation intact, because Americans abroad will be forever subject to these problems, forever
second-class citizens, not in the United States and outside the United States, forever living in a state of fear and this stuff. And by the way, make no mistake about it, you ought to take a look at what a Form 5471 looks like, which is the reporting document for this thing. It is.
Thank you. I've seen it.
I mean, you can't even imagine, yeah. You know, what's going on here. And as you might expect, you know, we've talked about the taxes of cost. Well, how about, you know, just the sheer magnitude of the compliance costs, right? I mean, you know, I know a number of sort of high-end U.S. tax preparers, and what I think I understand would be saying is they won't touch one of these 5471s for under about $5,000. You know, and that's even low end. So imagine you're trying to make some business work. You committed the crime of living outside the United States. You know, you're in a competitive business. You know, hello, businesses have to compete to survive. You know, say $5,000, or, you know, keep the arithmetic simple, let's say $6,000. You realize that's $500 a month you have to fork out to your accountant, you know, just to fill out a 5471. It's unbelievable.
And these aren't isolated examples. You know, it's not in terms of small business.
Small business owner, if you're going to, this is what it means.
In order to comply with the U.S. tax code, it's what you have to go through. And you know, John, it just underscores, and you hit on it just a minute or so ago. But the only solution that we can possibly support is pure RBT. Any solution that leaves CBT in place with carve outs to make it easier here or carve outs to make it easier there is still going to leave itself open to these kind of abuses of overseas Americans and overseas American owned businesses going forward. The only solution is pure RBT, isn't it?
You know, Jim, it is absolutely true. And I'm going to go a step further, you know, with some trepidation, is that I think that as this becomes more clearly understood, I think that anybody who proposes a solution that is not pure RBT is actually proposing the continued abuse of Americans abroad. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's what it is, because there is no way, as long as citizenship is a sufficient condition for tax residency, to ever be able to predict the kind of fallout from this type of situation.
Yeah, and these certainly are not malicious people or malicious organizations who are getting behind some of these solutions. These are people that generally have the better interest of overseas Americans at heart, but still that is the net effect of anything other than the pure
That's the simple FATCA of the matter, Jim. Okay. I mean, it really is. I'm not saying these aren't good people. You know, I think they are.
I understand. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
And I think they're working hard within the limits of their understanding. But the time has come to understand that most of these horrible abuses are the result of unintended consequences of citizenship taxation. For example, the whole mutual fund problem. You know, let's take Templeton Growth Fund. You know, you can buy the same fund in Buffalo. You can buy the same fund in Toronto. You buy it in Toronto, it's foreign. You know, you follow Warren Buffett's advice, and my favorite holding period is forever. You know, you hold 20 years, you sell, you know, 100% of the gain is likely to be taxed. You bought the same thing in Buffalo. No problem. Good investment. Congratulations. And, you know, and this is just one more example of the problem. And the only way to cure this, the only way to cure it is pure residency-based taxation, meaning citizenship cannot be used as a criterion for tax residency. And again, this is why people have got to get behind this, because, you know, as much as these proposals, you know, that are not pure RBT, you know, maybe advance with the best interests of people in mind, they never help everybody. Okay. And pure RBT, and this is the key point, helps all people all the time under all circumstances with no left outs, no carve outs. And that's why, Jim, we've got to support pure residency based taxation now.
For sure. John Richardson, thanks very much.
Till next week.